Hi guys, welcome to Body Talk. I'm your host, my name is Candy. I am a fourth year student study at UW. So today we will talk about how social media affect body image, no matter in the adolescence year or in current centrum. I think social media has been a really huge problem to really, you know, shifted everyone's perspective about bodies and body health and the relationship between our body and ourselves. So I invite two of the guest speakers today. First one is with Jenny, and she is one of my really good friends. We both dance when we're younger. So our topic will be talking about how really, you know, as a dancer, what are some norms and how social media really affect us. And then another guest speaker is my college professor. She is UW College of Education professor. She taught me in January for a class, Adolescent Development. And we talk a lot about, you know, the kids perspective and the puberty and everything, and how really social media affect adolescents, especially, you know, when social media is so powerful and strong. So yeah, I am really excited to share this because I think bringing other people's perspective into this podcast is really going to help everyone sharing their ideas and to know how in the future we can, you know, all making sure having boundaries with social media. So yeah, let's dive into those two conversations and hope you guys enjoy it. Okay, so I have my friend Jenny here. She's my girl. Anyways, we both do dance. So today we're just going to talk a little bit about like how dance sometimes really affect, you know, body image and everything, and also all the social media stuff right now recently, just saying like, oh, dancers should be skinny, dancers this, dancers cannot be overweight because how you're going to be on point shoes with, you know, overweight. So one of my story today is when I was in a Broadway dance camp, and me and my girls, we went to like a kind of lunch break, and we're in the line to get salad and then probably some pizza or pasta or something because they're like all in the same area. And then because the line's so long, one of the football coach from there got really pissed because he's just like, we don't have time for my players to eat. And then he's just saying like, oh, is that the dancers in this area? Should you guys go into the salad area more? And yeah. So I'm just like, from that, I'm just like, people always have a stereotype on body image, especially for dancers. So Jenny, do you have any stories you want to share? Because like, it's crazy sometimes being a dancer, just trying to, you know, having a body that is like everyone jealous of, but still like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like my experience as a dancer has been fairly okay. I didn't have any coaches that really, or like, you know, dance teachers that really affected me in a way. I know a lot of my friends did, and a lot of my friends who pursue dance mm-hmm. as a career have faced a lot of battles with body image because higher ups are telling them that you need to lose weight, like you need to do this and that, you need to go to the gym, like you guys are overweight when we are not overweight.
Yeah,
for me, I have like a very fast metabolism.
Yeah.
So I will openly admit that, like, I was at a high at one point mm-hmm. in my dance career just mm-hmm. because I was the typical body image of a ballet dancer.
Yeah, yeah.
Slim, skinny, no breasts, no butt.
Uh-huh.
That is what everybody thinks of a ballet dancer.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, like, until after dance I stopped dancing as much. I started to gain body dysmorphia from mm-hmm. media.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I was like, why don't I have breasts? Why don't I have a butt? Like, it did take a toll on me because I felt like I wasn't woman enough. I felt that I still had this, like, child image to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still struggling with that image today.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think about dance, and it wasn't that I pushed myself to be skinny, but I really did like the image of being skinny, and I also felt like that gave out a negative energy in a way.
Yeah.
Flaunting to other people, like, oh, this is what you should look like. Like, I am what you should look like, you know. And it really does impact the way I did think back then.
Mm-hmm.
But it's different for me now. And my body dysmorphia came in after I danced. But I know a lot of stories of my friends who experienced
yeah
the opposite.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah, it's just right now I'm not dancing that much. Before I was dancing, girl, I was fit. I was really fit.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, damn. I was looking at myself in the mirror just like after competition. So I was like, I look good. But like after, you know, I'm in college, just like I need to shift. Like dancing is not my career in the future. So it's kind of like I have to like go work out, but sometimes I don't have time to work out, or like sometimes I'm afraid like, oh, I'm gonna eat this, it's going to like lose all the muscles I have. Like I didn't work out that much because like, you know, sometimes I'm not feeling good, or it's like I'm like getting older, my body's not the same as before. But also on social media, sometimes people, you know, like posts like, oh, like doing this like help you to lose weight, like doing those dance workout, like, you know, like dancers like posting that, like it makes me like I miss what I have in the past, like the body I have. But like I also right now just trying to see how I can balance myself, you know, not letting social media too against myself, like because I am 22, I'm not 17, 16 anymore.
Right.
Like it's just hard for me to really sometimes accept like, oh, I wish I have that, you know, body. I don't have, you know, like I wanna have long legs or like something like that. But it's just the social media could never always, you know, they're trying to diverse like people in all the like shape of bodies can dance.
Mm-hmm.
But like the norm, the toxic norm is still there. Be like dancers should be skinny, dancers should not eat too much, then sure, his body should be, you know, exactly just like what ballerina looks like. So it's like that's how I just like, yeah. So it's really hard to really how to promote that.
Mm-hmm.
But it, yeah, I understand your point of view.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, I just performed with the MFA, and a lot of like my friends and family that came in, it was a new experience for them because they never got to see like contemporary dancing or like hip hop dancing before. And I wanted to share with them that, you know, they're so used to seeing ballet because I always did ballet. They always came to my performance and I think they had this typical image in their head.
Yeah.
Of seeing like a unity of people, like everyone, the same shape, same height, same look to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I had explained to them that like, you know what, my experience at UW definitely changed the way I see dance.
Yeah.
Because I feel, I don't know about you, but I feel like the teachers, the classroom, the environments, I feel like it's so much more healthier.
Yeah.
And I haven't been in like the deepest of, or like the worst of scenarios in the dance world.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky and grateful for that. But like, comparing the stories that we do hear about dance and then coming to dance at UW, it's completely different.
It is different.
It's more
of
a healthy environment. Everyone is accepted. Everyone can dance.
Yeah.
And I kind of had to have that conversation with my parents because they were like, oh, like, there's definitely different types of people. And I was like, see, like, you're my parents, but here I am to educate you that anybody can dance.
Yeah.
And people are here because they enjoy doing it. So, I think.
That's so true.
UW has definitely has a healthier dance environment, which I'm very grateful for.
Yeah, so it's like, whatever, I was going to exceed the times, but I like this conversation going. But, just, like, when I was in, you know, Oklahoma before, like, I was in OU during, like, COVID time. I took, like, ballet classes. It was really harsh on me. Like, the teacher is really harsh on me because I don't have any, you know, like, experiences in dance. Like, we have to wear tights, like, wear leotards, like, hair in a bun. Like, those classical ballet training. I mean, it doesn't, like, you know, make me to feel anything. Like, I would just, like, I like this, you know, discipline because I know how to, like, become better in the future. But also, in a way, just, like, when I come to UW, like, I feel more experienced and more accept into the dance world. Like, oh, yeah, like, I can do whatever I need. Like, I can be a contemporary dancer, but also I can do hip-hop and ballet. Like, not always, like, because you are a hip-hop dancer, you cannot do ballet. Because you're a ballet, you cannot do contemporary. So all of those things, and then the teachers, that's just like, if you're not feeling good, you can sit down and everything not force you. And they're like, you need to eat, you need to rest. I did performance in UW like, probably 2 years ago. It's the best experience. It's like, I see people, you know, like, the experiences, just like, I see so many people that they have different body image and body experiences can all be on the same stage as me. And then the and then the audience is really enjoying this kind of feeling. So it's just like people are not judging.
Yeah.
I like the how is not judging each other in like experiments, and that's why like dance is what about like bring people together.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I feel like my professor this quarter, she's always like, rest, you need food, you need water, balanced nutrition.
Yeah.
And then literally after the performance day, she was like, we're going to do yoga Lotties. And
I
she took it
her.
So easy on
yeah.
us. And I was like, thank goodness
she's
for a professor like her. Yeah.
Yeah. Like she's just always be like, if you need to rest or
yeah.
anything like that, like it's just, it's like I never experimented that because before doing competitive, like
mm.
it's like go, go, go. Like,
right.
Every single day at like freaking like 9 p.m. like
mm-hmm.
I was in the studio, we were doing cardios, like
mm-hmm.
intense cardios, and then I was just like, I was dead. Like,
oh, yeah.
I was like,
oh, yeah.
right, I was like, and then we dance after, like,
yeah.
techniques, like,
it's just like never ending.
Yeah, it's
story,
like a
yeah.
never, like, it's never really telling me they're like, you need to eat, and then,
yeah.
like, you know, there's like stereotypes on social media be like, dancer snack. Goldfish, the fruit.
Yeah.
Like, what is
like,
that?
Come on.
Like,
what about a meal?
I know. Goldfish, apple, carrots, and some ranch.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, literally that's what I did. I did
yeah.
eat, like, when I was doing a competitive. Like, this is what I eat, like,
mm-hmm.
as a dancer. So it's really hard for me to, like, oh, yeah, like, how about I eat a meal? So right now it's hard for me to eat a meal
mm-hmm.
before I dance because the anxiety kick in. Like, my stomach is, like,
yep.
stop. Like,
yep.
no, I
yep.
can't. I'm going to puke. So
mm-hmm.
it's, like, those kind of things. And I see myself, you know, losing. I'm not saying losing weight, but I see myself, like, kind of, like, reduce some weights during the performance, like, week or before because I was stressed. And also, like, it was a hard time for me.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I always cannot get over that kind of mental, like, dilemma. Like, oh, you should eat a full meal before dance. Because
yeah.
they always tell you, don't eat too much. Don't eat too
yeah.
much. So it's, like, that's how just, like, oh, yeah, I cannot. Do that.
Right.
So it's like, but in UW, like, gradually makes me feel like this experience is really, really accept everyone.
I think UW has really good professors because it's more of like the mind body connection that
yeah.
they are trying to tell you,
yeah.
like tell the students,
yeah,
which I think is what is missing from a lot of training.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like you said, it's always go, 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 dance, 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 dance.
Yeah.
And it's never about, how about you take time to take care of your mind,
yeah.
your body, how you're overall feeling, you
yeah.
know. But that's what's made dance so much more enjoyable here at UW, just
yeah.
because they're reminding you, they're telling you that you need to take care of your body.
Yeah.
Which makes dance so much more better and more
yeah.
fun to enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just not as much pressure, and that shouldn't even be a thing, like, in other training institutions, unless you, like, you know, there's big institutions
mm-hmm.
that train hard for ballet, but
mm-hmm.
I also feel like they need to implement mind-body training.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah.
Your mental health is not going to be okay
yeah.
if you're just
not
told
eating.
To keep going,
yeah.
not eat, replenish. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Perfect.
Yeah.
I like this conversation.
Yeah.
But just, I hope the social media in the future, like, don't
yeah.
really have like girls' dinner.
Yeah.
Like
hope...
dancers' dinner. Like,
yeah.
Oh,
what
am I eating the competition day? Like,
mm-hmm.
I was just like, I don't want to educate the future generation like this. Like,
yeah.
they're not going to eat, they're not going to like enjoy. So that's how why social media is like, you need to take your boundaries.
Yeah.
It's, like,
yeah.
I really think like people on TikTok, like, not mean like girls' dinner, means that's every girl's dinner. That's why people seeing us girls to be like,
yeah,
like skinny, like bro.
Yeah,
no, it's not like that.
Yeah,
so
it's a
really
stereotype.
Take,
for
yeah,
sure.
It's really like yeah, especially and also targeting dancers and who are also people in sports.
Yeah,
like those kind of things. So
yeah,
just really need to take care of them.
For
okay,
sure.
Perfect. Yay! And that's it. Well, thanks to Jenny.
Yay!
Thanks to Jenny to come
you.
To my podcast, and we'll see you. And I will see you later. And I have another guest speaker. Is my college professor from education, and she's going to talk about how social media will affect adolescents' development. So see you later. Okay, so today I have my professor Julie here, and she's my adolescent development class last winter quarter, and I really learned a lot in that class because we talk about, you know, how puberty really influence people, how puberty influence adolescents, and how, like, especially social media affect like child development. So talking about when I was first year when I was coming to the United States, I was 15, and although social media is not that really, you know, developed that time, but still I was afraid the culture shifted. I was afraid, like, oh, I'm going to gain weight because I was eating American food. And then my host moms all introduced me those, you know, fried, like, chicken, fried fish, and, like, French fries. And then in South, I was in Arkansas, crazy story. But, like, those, I don't know, there's, like, I guess Cracker Barrels that time is just my favorite restaurant, but they have those like dumplings that is my favorite, but also I was still gaining weight. So it's like I was having a hard time to eat, but also I want to enjoy all the food. Because of social media, it really changed my perspective, like how, you know, like treat myself equally with my body and my mindset. So today I'm just asking Professor Jody, did I pronounce your name right?
Jody? Yes, okay. Jody.
Okay, perfect. So Professor Jody, so as you know, you're teaching like the classic adolescent development. So like what you think, like what is the biggest problem that you see like social media affect adolescents?
Social media, you know, it can have pros and cons depending on the type of information that students are accessing and the different ways that they're engaging with it. But over the years, we've found more and more problems with it. The research kind of shows that there's some increases in depression and some kids are exposed to some pretty problematic content. And there's just so many social messages that kids are exposed to, like you were saying with the eating issues. The, you know, pressure to be thin, pressure to conform to a certain body type. The ways that you can start off with sort of a potentially healthy advice about how to eat and how really quickly that can turn into a lot of unhealthy habits. Just a couple clicks and you can get into some really unhealthy diet culture. And so all of that combined, you've got kind of from the broad, you know, the broad way that we think about like how culture influences how kids think, it's kind of all right there on social media, along with being just so engaging and hard to put down, that they're constantly exposed to all these messages that are potentially really problematic.
It's really problematic. I believe it's like the peer pressure that's also the thing, because it's like one in like the adolescence class we talk about like the cyberbullying. That's just what happens, especially, you know, in a school system. It's like kids just like compare to each other, like no matter, you know, materialism or like anything else, but like, you know, girls wearing good, like wearing this, like show their bodies and everything. And also just like the dress code sometimes, like I undergo just like, oh, I cannot show anything in my back when I was younger. Like also wearing a sweater that cannot show that. And also it's just like, oh, we cannot wear like too short skirt. But also it's like those kind of like, I don't know, outfits sometimes when we wear it, we just like implicit like tell us we need to look good in order to look good in those right outfit. But it's like I'm just like, because right now, you know, like not like before like the century, like, you know, some clothes are really conservative. I'm not saying conservative, just like they're like cover, like majority just like showing our arms and then like half of our legs, but like right now the clothes is getting a little bit aggressive in my opinion. It's just like too short. That's what my mom said. Like the every single time my mom was like, I see you go out close, she's just like, is that close? So it's like, that's just like one thing. I was just like, yes, mom, you are right. That's not close. But like, you know, that's the couch I have to get into a club that I was 22.
Right.
I cannot wear a t-shirt to get in because the culture doesn't accept me. Like all like the social media right now is like promoting, like, I don't know, just short, like skirt and then like tank top and everything. And then that's caused girls trying to look good. And because of the influencers on social media be like, you need to look at this way. Just like, I think it's not only like how we think right now as in the 21st century, but also just like the social media's pictures. And then those pictures really just show out, right?
Yes, 100%. The imagery, the image heavy aspect of social media is very powerful. And kind of the images that kids are bombarded with, especially in young adolescents as their bodies are changing and, you know, the where fat is on your body starts to shift and kids can develop some really unrealistic expectations. And you add into that the fact that so many of the images that they see are airbrushed or manipulated in some way to create a really unrealistic expectation of what, you know, the wide variety of bodies that are out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, if people are doing things for likes or for views or whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
Or if people are making comments, like you said, with the bullying that can happen, people can get vicious online.
They can.
With the ways that they respond to people's bodies. And so, really... there's potential for damage for our teens as they're exposed to overly airbrushed images or just unrealistic images, along with the ways that the social pressure among the kids that they know and how they talk about those images. Those two things combined can really have a strong influence.
Just like in like adult class that we learned this quarter, I was with Professor Maxine. And then we talk about, we watch a movie, we kind of watch a short clips about, you know, a guy and her and his son. So the guy was doing something crazy and his son watched the guy was, you know, his dad was doing things. So he like kind of like doing the same thing. So it's like, that's how, like, you know, as we think about right now on TikTok, there's like the social media's influencers, they're adults, but the audience, majority of them are teenagers. So when they watch them to do it, they're just they're just going to inadvertently just going to follow them to do everything the same. So I think it's just like how like they're trying to become adults, but it kind of like their perspective is not really shifted in a way that like, oh, how to minimize yourself like with those like too aggressive content, or trying to like making sure that you are healthy towards your body. It's just like they cannot categorize it because they're like, oh, those are the information I got. I don't know how to like, you know, kind of understand the back of the story. But like they just like, well, it looks good for me. Well, the girl looks good. Well, the makeup looks good. Well, okay, well, that habit looks good, so it's going to help me to lose weight. They just only know the results, but they don't know the process is actually going to hurt them in the future.
Right, and so this is where teaching our young teens some critical thinking skills has actually been shown to be, you know, a potentially effective intervention for kids with who are, you know, trying to deal with the onslaught of social media. And that if we can show kids... kind of the different messages that they're, that are out there that they're kind of being bombarded with, and give them a space to just sort of slow down with that and say like, okay, like who's benefiting from this? You know, who is it that's making money off this? How does this actually make you feel? And what are some other, you know, what are some other stories that could be told? And help kids find some of the positive content that's actually out there. Because there is positive content. Like, there's whole movements around body positivity, body neutrality, actual real self-care spaces that are helpful, some good positive mental health spaces. And so those things do exist. It's just, are those the things that our kids are first accessing? Are those the images that they're bombarded with? And so really helping kids to be able to step back and engage in that critical thinking can support them in navigating social media in a more healthy way. And then sometimes just taking a break from it. Taking a break from social media and looking around the rest of the world. That can also be really healthy.
I think it's teaching them like first like why you want to, you know, do this. And then like ask them how you're going to achieve it, and then like what is the result. So let them to like think about like thinking like this way, and then like when they think for the result, like the pro and cons, like the pros, okay, you look good. The cons is like your body's going to be damaged, and then that's going to be a long term, and then your mental health is going to be bad if you pursue something aggressive. So let them like to really like understand like the like outcome of it, and then tell them like, you know, there's some people go through this, like eating disorder is not a joke. It's like it's hard to get out, and then like it's really hard for you to like, oh, I have eating disorder, okay, I'm gonna be good. No, there's whole other movies talking about girls trying to gain weight, and then there's girls who fighting eating disorders, and there's girls like, you should be grateful that you can eat, you should be grateful that you can enjoy a lot of food, because there's a lot of people on the other planet there.
It's very true. And I do think it is important. I mean, as with a lot of topics with adolescents, yeah. giving accurate information
yeah, that's
is
true.
Really
yeah.
important because they are flooded with so much information out there.
Yeah.
And really supporting them and getting some accurate information about health and nutrition is really key, because
yeah.
otherwise you can start going down fad diet rabbit holes that are really quite dangerous.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, letting them know, like, what is a healthy meal?
Mm-hmm.
How much food does a person need to
mm-hmm.
be able to do things like
yeah.
run around and dance for hours?
Yeah, definitely.
You actually need a fair amount of calories to be able to put in that amount of work.
Yeah.
And so giving kids really the accurate information on that is really key.
Definitely. So last question before
okay.
we end this section
yeah.
is, I know as you are a mother,
uh-huh.
So what is your strategy to make sure like your kids are, you know, not too too obsessed with social media when they face some difficulties, or if they're, you know, kind of, I know in the class that you told me, like, when your child's facing like identity crisis because of social media sometimes, like
mm-hmm.
how you help them, you know, talk through them to overcome these difficulties.
It was a challenge. So when my kids were younger, yeah. I didn't know very much about social media,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of jumped on it along with every other teenager at
uh-huh.
that point.
Yeah.
Before I knew a whole lot to say no to. Now that I have my third kid
uh-huh.
who's starting down this road,
yeah.
I'm approaching things a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
Really thinking about like how much access to social media is appropriate at a young
mm-hmm.
age. How do we create spaces that are safe for kids online?
Mm-hmm.
Really thinking about, you know, like, okay, who are your friends?
Mm-hmm.
Having some really open discussion,
yeah.
I think, and trying to create spaces where my kids will tell me about what's going on social media, so that we can have a conversation about it and really
yeah.
kind of develop some of that critical thinking
yeah.
skills, and show them other spaces, and then just putting some time limits on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's not right before bed. It's, you know, put your phone away.
Yeah. And not in the morning. At desk. Not at a dinner.
Not
everyone,
as
but
you're trying to do homework.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some ways that, you know, they can use tech to communicate
uh-huh.
with friends.
Yeah.
And that can be lovely.
Uh-huh.
But to really be involved and know kind of what information they're accessing and
yeah.
kind of constantly checking in about what is it they're accessing in a way that they'll keep telling you.
Yeah.
Because if you shut down the conversation by telling them it's inappropriate, then they just won't talk to you. So you've
got to... I do agree with that.
Keep them talking.
Yeah.
Keep them talking and encourage them to engage in that critical dialogue so that they can make choices that are healthy for themselves.
Perfect.
Over time, because it's there for them, so they've
yeah.
got to learn how to navigate it in a healthy way.
Perfect. Wow. That was great suggestions to the parents and upcoming parents who are trying to, you know, educate kids with the social media usage. But
great.
That's just all we have today. I know we excess probably so many minutes, but it's okay. I'm still going to upload it. So thank you so much for joining my, podcast. And thank you so much for Professor Jody to join my podcast and willing to help me with my media project. So hope you guys really enjoy it, and this is Candy. I will see you next time.